Imagine you're standing in the lobby of a brand new state-of-the-art skyscraper.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
The marble floors are gleaming, the elevators are just, whisper quiet, the climate control is flawless.
Sounds pretty nice, honestly.
Right. From the outside and even from the inside, it feels like a fortress of modern engineering, completely safe.
Like nothing could possibly go wrong.
Exactly. Completely predictable. But what if you could suddenly see behind the drywall?
Oh boy, that's usually where it gets messy.
Yeah, what if you saw that the plumbing was buckling under extreme pressure, the electrical grid was actively sparking, and like the property managers were frantically, quietly patching cracks in the foundation before anyone noticed?
That is honestly a phenomenal metaphor to start us off.
Right, because that illusion of total control perfectly describes our technology landscape right now. Welcome to your personalized deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Today, our mission is to explore a really fascinating stack of sources, articles, research, and analysis. All of it is pulled from a comprehensive May 27th, 2026 report titled Tech in Night, Security Crises, and Tech Transformations.
And going back to your metaphor, today's sources are doing exactly that. They are pulling back the drywall on the digital infrastructure we use every single day.
And what we're finding is that the companies we trust most are, well, they're really struggling to maintain that illusion of control.
Yeah, that is the exact through line we are tracking today.
So we're laying out the agenda. We're going to unpack six major inflection points. We're looking at massive hidden vulnerabilities inside Apple's pristine ecosystem and what happens when global cyber warfare spills out of the digital world and hits our physical public transit.
Which is terrifying, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. Plus, we will explore how companies are trying to fix the human element, the frustrating realities of AI being forced into our daily health tracking apps, and finally, an ongoing hardware price war.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the theme tying all these stories together is the sheer hidden cost of our interconnected world.
Right, because everything is hooked up to the internet now.
Exactly. We are rapidly moving to a place where the line between digital convenience and physical risk isn't just blurring, I mean, it's disappearing entirely.
So by the time we finish today, you will probably look at the devices in your home very differently.
Oh, without a doubt.
So let's go straight to the penthouse of that skyscraper, to what is arguably the most polished, tightly controlled tech ecosystem on the planet, which is Apple.
The walled garden itself.
The walled garden, exactly. According to our sources, Apple just executed a massive retroactive security disclosure.
And when we say massive, we mean massive.
Right. They quietly updated their security pages to reveal that they patched over 170 vulnerabilities in May 2026 alone.
Yeah, 170 in 1 month.
And this wasn't just for the newest software, right?
Take that.
This spanned older operating systems like macOS Sonoma 14.8 and iOS 15.8.8. I mean, that's supporting iPhones all the way back to 2015.
Which is wild to think about.
Up to the brand new iOS 26 and macOS Tahoe 26.5.
Over 170 patches in a single month is a staggering volume. I mean, it is a massive structural load for any engineering team to handle.
Right. And to be clear, these were not like minor graphical glitches. We are talking about severe flaws.
Oh, yeah, some of these CVEs were pretty shocking.
Totally. For instance, there was CVE 2025-30468 in Siri, which allowed someone to access your private browsing tabs without any authentication.
Yikes.
Yeah. And then CVE 2025-31271 allowed FaceTime calls to be answered on locked Macs.
Wait, even if the user had specifically disabled lock screen notifications?
Exactly. And there were even deep core services vulnerabilities allowing apps to maliciously modify the file system.
It's just bad news all around.
Okay, let's unpack this because Apple's strategy here is highly controversial. They actually fixed these problems months ago, but they deliberately withheld the technical details from the public until now.
Yeah, the delayed disclosure strategy.
Right. It's like a car manufacturer secretly fixing your brakes during a routine oil change, but not telling you the brakes were defective until months later, supposedly to stop car thieves from learning about the flaw.
That's a great way to put it.
So I have to ask, does this security through obscurity actually protect users, or does it just protect the company's reputation?
Well, it's a fascinating mechanism, and it really all comes down to the mechanics of reverse engineering.
How so?
When a company like Apple releases a software update, malicious hackers immediately download it. They compare the new patched code against the old broken code to see exactly what changed.
Ah, so they're looking for the exact spot that got fixed.
Right. By doing that, they essentially map out the vulnerability. If Apple published the full details of the flaw on day one, they would be handing attackers the exact blueprints to break into any device that hasn't downloaded the update yet.
Okay, I see. So by delaying the disclosure, Apple buys the average consumer crucial time to just let their phones update automatically overnight.
Exactly. It's all about buying time for the average user.
That makes sense for me and my personal iPhone. But what about a massive corporation? I imagine a hospital IT director managing 10,000 devices feels very differently about being kept in the dark.
Oh, they absolutely despise it. And that is the agonizing trade-off here.
Because they need to know what they're dealing with.
Right. For enterprise IT professionals, a vulnerability isn't just a bug. It is a measurable organizational risk. When a massive patch drops, an IT director needs to know what it does immediately.
So they can decide if they need to push the update right away.
Exactly. Because forcing an emergency software update on 10,000 hospital iPads might accidentally break their custom patient charting software.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, they need the technical details to decide, you know, do we update tonight and risk breaking our apps, or do we wait a week? When Apple hides the severity of the flaw, they completely blind those security professionals.
So Apple is desperately trying to maintain control over the narrative and the rollout.
They are. And what that 170-plus patch number really proves is that Apple's attack surface has grown just beyond comprehension.
Because they have so many different products now.
Right. Between cloud AI services, the Vision Pro, and traditional hardware, the ecosystem is so vast that bugs are just becoming inevitable.
But at least Apple caught those bugs and patched them. They maintain control eventually.
Also, yeah.
Let's look at what happens when that control fails entirely and the threat moves from a compromised browser tab to physical moving metal.
Right.
Let's talk about the Los Angeles transit system hack.
The LA Metro attack. This is where the digital world crashes violently into the physical one.
Yeah, so our sources dive into a Gambit security report regarding the March 2026 cyber attack on the LACMTA. Hackers didn't just breach a few emails. They stole 700 gigabytes of data.
Which is a massive amount of internal data.
Huge. And they compromised the virtualization infrastructure, web servers, and most alarmingly, the Division 11 train control display. It took weeks for the transit authority to recover.
Weeks of disruption for a major city.
Now, our sources lay out a very complex geopolitical backdrop here, and we are just neutrally imparting the findings. The attack was originally claimed by a group called Ababil of Minab.
Right, who claimed their name referenced a U.S. airstrike on an Iranian school.
Yes, but investigations by Gambit Security, Israel's National Cyber Directorate, and U.S. agencies attribute the attack directly to Iran's Ministry of Intelligence and State Security, the MOIS.
Placing it right in the context of recent geopolitical tensions and bombings.
Exactly. And these hackers also simultaneously targeted transit in South Florida and construction firms in Saudi Arabia.
It was a highly coordinated campaign.
But focusing on the specific access here, I mean, if hackers are accessing the Division 11 train control display, this isn't just a data heist anymore, right? Weren't we one click away from physical train derailments?
You are absolutely right to be alarmed. To understand how terrifying this is, we have to look at how modern infrastructure is wired.
Okay, lay it out for me.
Historically, transit authorities, power grids, and water plants had two completely separate networks. You had the IT network, which handled emails, payroll, that sort of thing.
Sure, standard office stuff.
Then you had the OT network, the operational technology. That physically controlled the train switches, the water pumps, the electrical grids, and they were entirely disconnected.
Air-gapped.
Exactly. Oh. But over the last decade, for the sake of efficiency and remote monitoring, we bridged those networks.
So we basically connected the administrative office to the train tracks.
Precisely. And that virtualization infrastructure you mentioned, that's the software that allows multiple virtual servers to run on a single piece of hardware. When the attackers compromised that, they essentially got the master keys.
Wow.
Accessing the Division 11 display means they crossed the bridge from IT into OT. They had visibility into the physical location and movement of multi-ton trains.
That is just horrifying. But why the fake hacktivist group? I mean, if a nation state like Iran's Mirai is behind this, why not just own it?
It's a mechanism of modern cyber warfare called plausible deniability.
Ah, so they can say it wasn't them.
Right. If a nation state openly admits to hacking a U.S. civilian transit system, that could be construed as an act of war, triggering severe economic or military retaliation.
So by routing the attack through a fake hacktivist persona, making it look like a grassroots political protest, the state sponsor avoids crossing that red line.
Exactly. We saw the exact same tactic earlier this year when a fake group called Handala claimed to hack the medical tech company Stryker.
That's just a smokescreen.
It is. And for infrastructure operators globally, the LA Metro incident is a glaring warning. Cyber warfare is increasingly targeting poorly secured transportation and water systems. Mm-hmm. You can't rely on an attacker just stopping at data theft anymore.
Because disruptions there actually threaten public safety.
Right. It's a massive wake-up call regarding disaster recovery.
Which perfectly transitions us to how these attackers actually get in. Because as sophisticated as a nation-state intelligence agency is, they rarely use, like, cinematic, impossible-to-break code to breach a server.
Oh, no. It's usually much simpler.
Right. They usually just trick an employee into handing over the keys by clicking a bad link.
The human element. It is always the weakest link in the chain of control.
Exactly. So how do we fix the human firewall? Our sources highlight a completely new integration between Dashlane Omnix, which is an enterprise password vault, and Nobe4, a major security awareness training platform.
Two very big players in the space.
Yeah. And they've built a system using a RESTful ATI framework that creates a real-time feedback loop. When compromised credential usage or a phishing threat is detected, it triggers immediate targeted training for that specific user in under a second.
Under a second. That speed is incredible.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It's like getting pulled over and being forced to take a driving safety class on the side of the road the exact moment you speed.
That's a brutal mental image, but yeah.
Rather than sitting in a boring, mandatory quarterly seminar 3 months later when you've completely forgotten what you even did wrong.
That is the perfect analogy. And from a psychological perspective, it is brilliant.
Really? Why is that? Because human beings do not learn well from abstract, delayed punishment. We learn best with immediate consequences attached to specific context.
That makes sense. When you are sitting in a quarterly cybersecurity seminar, the threat feels hypothetical.
Right. You just tune it out.
I know I do. It's just corporate white noise.
Exactly. But if you click a bad link and your screen immediately locks and says, hey, you just clicked a simulated phishing link. Here's exactly why that email was fake. Please complete this 2-minute module to regain access.
Your retention rate probably skyrockets.
It does. This just-in-time training closes the feedback loop. It shifts enterprise security from a passive, one-way broadcast into a proactive, personalized intervention where behavioral change can actually be measured.
Okay, so sub-second automated intervention is clearly a massive leap forward when we are talking about enterprise cybersecurity.
Oh, for sure.
But let's flip that concept on its head. What happens when tech giants force automated help into our personal daily lives, and we absolutely hate it? Ah, the tension between what a company wants to build and what a user actually wants to use. You're talking about the death of Fitbit.
I am. The official Fitbit app is officially dead.
R.I.P. Fitbit.
Truly. Alongside the launch of the new Fitbit Air hardware, Google has completely shut down the old app and forcefully migrated all legacy users over to Google Health.
And people are not happy.
The user revolt is intense. According to the sources, the user interface is just totally cluttered. On the old app, you could see all your data at a glance. Now, users can only see two large data tiles on their home screen without scrolling through deep menus.
Which is incredibly frustrating if you're used to the old layout.
But the absolute worst part is the AI. The app forces users to read chatty, unskippable paragraphs of AI slop from a virtual health coach just to see their basic stats.
Oh, no. Nobody wants that.
Right. Why do tech companies always play the if it ain't broke, break it game? I mean, if I just want to see my heart rate from a morning run, why am I forced to scroll through an AI generating platitudes about my 15-minute walk to the grocery store?
This raises an important question about a philosophy called AI-first product design.
Okay, tell me about that.
To understand this, we have to look at the corporate mandate. Remember, Google paid $2.1 billion for the Fitbit brand.
That's a huge investment.
It is, and they bought it because Fitbit had perfected simplicity. It was a reliable tool. But today, every tech executive is under immense pressure from shareholders to prove they are leading the artificial intelligence race.
So they have to jam AI into everything, even if it ruins the product.
Precisely. Google Health is suffering from an identity crisis. It's trying to be a passive fitness tracker, an active lifestyle coach, and an advanced generative AI assistant all at the exact same time.
And ending up mediocre at all three.
Exactly. It shows the tension between a company desperately wanting to showcase its AI capabilities and users who just want reliable tools. They destroyed the simplicity that made it successful in the first place.
It's the ultimate loss of user control. But what's fascinating here is how different companies are approaching this AI arms race. While Google's rushed integration is actively alienating its user base, Apple seems to have watched that disaster and taken the exact opposite approach.
A hyper-cautious approach.
Exactly. Let's look at the release of iOS and iPadOS 26.6 Beta 1. Users are furiously complaining online, calling it an entirely empty update.
An empty update? That's pretty rare for Apple.
Right. Build 23G5020AE. They are digging through the software, and the only visible changes they can find are an Apple Maps security upgrade for how location data is handled and a new notification for exceeding the blocked contacts limit.
That's literally it.
That is literally it. So I have to ask, is an empty update ever actually empty? Or is this really just Apple furiously reinforcing the foundation before iOS 27 and the heavily rumored Siri 2.0 AI update drop at WWDC 2026?
You're spot on. That analysis is completely correct. In the world of operating systems, there is no such thing as an empty update.
So what are they actually doing?
Well, Apple learned a very painful lesson years ago with the famously buggy launch of iOS 11. When you rush shiny new features, you break the foundational code.
Ah, so they're trying to avoid a repeat of that.
Right. Let's look at that Apple Maps tweak. The under-the-hood work, especially around how location data is handled, is crucial so that third-party apps don't break when the new AI tools launch.
Because if the location API breaks, every ride-sharing and delivery app breaks with it.
Exactly. By releasing these incremental maintenance updates, Apple is ensuring extreme structural stability before unleashing a transformative AI.
Making sure the plumbing works before they install the new sinks.
Exactly. It is a direct contrast with Google's messy rollout.
Okay, so Apple plays a masterclass in software ecosystem stability. But according to our sources, they are leaving a massive gaping hole in their hardware pricing, and competitors are finally bringing the heat.
This is where the hardware rebellion comes in.
It is. Let me introduce you to the Lenovo IdeaTab 11-inch 2.5K. This device costs roughly $170 to $180. Yeah, that is less than half the price of Apple's $349 base model iPad. And the specs are honestly baffling for that price point.
What kind of specs are we talking about?
It has a MediaTek Dimensity 6300 processor, 8 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage. But the kicker is the screen. It features a 90 hertz laminated IPS display with 274 pixels per inch.
That's sharper than a Retina display.
It is, and it has built-in low blue light technology. Plus, it's future-proof to Android 17 with security patches promised until 2029.
That is a very aggressive package.
Right. So what does this all mean? How is a sub-$200 Android tablet offering a 90 hertz refresh rate and a laminated high-res display while Apple's entry-level iPad still feels dated?
What's fascinating here is that while Lenovo wins on paper, we have to balance the hype with the ecosystem reality.
Okay, what's the catch?
The Android tablet ecosystem still lacks heavy hitters. If you want to use professional creative tools like Procreate for illustration or LumaFusion for video editing, they just aren't there.
The app gap.
Yeah. Plus, that MediaTek chip, while decent, simply cannot beat the performance of Apple Silicon if you push it hard.
But I mean, most people buying a $170 tablet aren't editing 4K video.
Exactly. And that is the point. Lenovo's aggressive move exposes what we call the Apple tax.
Oh, right. Paying just for the logo.
Basically. For a student or a casual user wanting media consumption, web browsing, and emails, Lenovo proves you don't need to spend $350+ for a capable device.
It's just undeniable value.
It is. Competition like this forces the entire market to abandon the idea that entry level has to mean poor quality.
Well, that is finally a win for the consumer. So let's bring all of this together for you, the listener. We've covered incredible ground today.
We really have, from top to bottom.
We started by going from the massive scale of Apple's hidden vulnerabilities to the terrifying physical risks of nation-state infrastructure hacks on the LA Metro.
The collision of IT and OT.
Right. Then we explored the promise of immediate psychological security training with Dashlane and KnowBe4. We vented about the frustrations of forced AI in our health apps and finished with a good old-fashioned hardware price war.
It's a vast amount of information, but it all connects back to that illusion of control we talked about at the start.
It truly does, because every single layer of the technology you interact with daily, from the tablet in your hands to the app tracking your health to the train you ride to work, is undergoing a radical, sometimes painful transformation.
We are living inside that skyscraper,
yeah,
and the walls are actively shifting around us.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
So to wrap up, do you have any final thoughts for everyone listening?
I do. It leaves us with one final vital thought to ponder. If artificial intelligence is now being embedded so deeply into our personal health data and operating systems, while simultaneously we are seeing record numbers of zero-day vulnerabilities and nation-state hacks on our infrastructure.
Yeah.
At what point does the smart tech in our lives become too much of a security liability to justify the convenience?
Wow. At what point do we just pull the plug? Something to really think about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.